Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Reborn Identity.
If my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sins and will heal their land.
Lord, I come into your presence. Thanksgiving and praise, I bow before your throne with the worries of my day. For I know that you will hear me when I kneel to pray. But only if I listen and
back to the Reborn Identity. This is Vivian Kelly with Ruthie Munoz. Ruthie, are you there?
I am here. How are you? Good evening.
I'm doing well. Good evening. You know, Ruthie, I just wanted to just touch base with you. You know, we have been playing phone tags for the last 3 weeks or something like that, and my life has been a little bit, how can I say, it has been a little bit busy. However, I was reading through your posts. And I don't want to talk too much into it, but I understand that you are grieving the passing of a good friend of yours, and I'm sorry to not have been there for you, but then I'm sorry also that you have to go through grieving again. So So I just wanted to tell you that.
Thank you.
Was it sudden?
She'd been ill for a little bit. She had cancer, breast cancer. We thought she was doing well, but I guess it was time for her to go home to be with the Lord.
Okay, yeah. Well, I'm so sorry to hear that. You know, grieving is, we're going to have next week Joanne Funch. She's a grieving specialist, counselor, you name it, and you know, I'm now understanding grieving, you know. So aside, you know, like yesterday I was driving and I immediately was going to pick up the phone and call grandma or mom to let her know what I was doing. And I realized, oh, I can't do that. So it's kind of weird.
That happens for a while. I mean, my sister's been gone 10 years, and there are days that I have a craving to call her, and then I have to remind myself that she's no longer here. Same thing with my mom. With my dad, I no longer have that. My dad's been gone 18 years, but you know, it takes some time.
Does it? Oh, okay. Because I thought I was going crazy, and I'm like, okay, wait a minute, hold on. Intellectually, like I say, I know, but it's the weirdest thing. It's the weirdest feeling to what I had to do in my mind, though, and it's really weird. What I had to do in my mind is made believe I called her and just hear what I know she would be saying. You know, I'm proud of you. Continue, you know, the missionary work. You know, I was thinking about you. I can just still hear that, you know.
Yeah.
And it helped me through.
Of course. But, you know, like I said, that's normal. That's, you know, and it's going to pop up again whenever something of significance comes up that you would normally have called to share with her, then that'll pop up. So just be prepared for that. It's not abnormal in any way. But just know that in time it'll go away. One thing that helped me a lot with my mom, and I mean, it still pops up now and then, but I, for example, like I know her home number by memory, but I didn't know her cell phone number by memory, and I deleted it. I deleted all her numbers from my phone. Of course, I regretted it later, but it really helped me to maintain my sanity, because when I went to look for her number, it was no longer there. And so that kind of kept me in a reality check, if that makes any sense.
Wow, and it's funny because you know what popped up in my mind just recently? 212-893-5202, that's 30 years ago, her phone number.
Wow.
It's like, wow, that's now that number, of course, it's been passed over and over to somebody else. But anyway, aside from that, and, you know, I now understand what you were saying before, and I kept on saying, oh, please, you know, I can handle it. But aside from that, how are you doing? And if there's any prayer requests or praise reports?
Well, there's a serious family matter, which I can't discuss, but it's been really weighing me down, it's brought up some things from the past, and I don't know, it's just a really horrible situation, if you could pray for that, I would really appreciate that, and just that God would give me forgiveness, because, as I said, you know, this has brought up some stuff, and all these, you know, human feelings have, like, popped up again, and I am really struggling with having a forgiving spirit and having grace, don't know, just bothers me. So if you could lift that up. Praise report, my oldest daughter turned 23.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, really excited. Doesn't seem like that long ago that I had her. I'm just getting ready, you know, to ship off my youngest one to college. So, just, you know.
Empty nesting that they say that it's going to be.
Yeah, it's going to be strange.
Okay.
Going to be a little strange. But and that's pretty much it for right now. I will tell you a praise report. I'm preparing for a mission trip later this year to Russia. And so today we were talking and praying about what we should do for BBS. And it's the general consensus is that we want to write the BBS based on a vision that our mission trip leader feels God has given her. And so I'll be writing that with her. So I've never done that before, but I am excited, and I'm just praying that God will will guide me, guide, you know, my words and so forth, as well as being able to put Bible verses, memory verses to music to share with the kids. So I'm excited about that. A little nervous, but excited.
Wow.
So I need prayer. Need a lot of prayer for that.
Prayer for that. Okay. I'm going to mention real quickly that, you know, it's really weird, but great. This is my favorite word lately, weird. Bible work, awesome church, can't say more. It's just, I mean, it will take two or three shows to talk about it, but Bible work, awesome church. The 16th Street Seventh Adventist Church in San Bernardino is on fire, and there's so many people wounded, and, you know, we're in a battlefield for the Lord, and we know that. And I'm just, you know, putting in prayer, because I am actually going into gang infested areas, and I might have to go on my own, which is not a problem, because with God all things are possible. But it's in San Bernardino, and I'm going to tell you, we've gotten really good positive responses. I find myself praying for these people. I know them by name. I mean, I know them by face. I mean, I usually don't remember faces and names, but God has given me that special gift right now that I'm like, oh, I know who you are. Oh, I remembering all their needs, because, you know, just because we're Bible workers doesn't mean we just have to push religion. No, we don't. We show them Jesus Christ. And then, I mean, we just show them Jesus Christ through our reflection and our actions. And through our actions, we're able to meet them where they're at. Okay?
Yeah.
And so I've been through some places. Yesterday there was a demon that actually got into this guy. And I went, oh, man, you should have been there. We were going door to door. And this demon got into this guy, and this guy was like following the head, you know, the lead Bible worker, because I am, you know, assisting him, and another young lady too, and we were there, and he was like, he called him out, he goes, let me talk to you, and then he went over there to talk to him just to see what he was, you know, because we already knew, we already had some contact with him, but he would follow us, and he just targeted the, you know, the lead Bible worker, and which is Pastor D, and I decided to stay in the back and just walk next to this demon as I was praying. But his focus was more for Pastor D. And Pastor D and the Sister K started, you know, singing for the Lord out loud, and I just followed them, and I was evaluating, you know, how I'd become into this observant mode and just praying. When we got to this house, this other gentleman, this guy was drunk, this other gentleman saw us coming up in this family there, and this gentleman was also drunk, but he spoke like with authority of, you know, like, you know, because we know that demons have different authorities and different ranks, as we know. And he says, don't bother them. Do you know who you're messing with? You know, it's like, leave them alone. Like, let's not get into that kind of trouble, okay? And the man kept on bothering, and the guy just kind of threw a sign and says, I will, you know, like, go and beat you. So as he was walking towards the car, he put his hat down, and it fell on the ground. He went to talk to him. He says, you know, I will take care of you right now. I mean, these are two drunk people. And let me tell you that when I picked up the hat, he came back, and he goes, thank you so much. Don't worry, I'll take care of this. Literally, we were praying that this, you know, like the demonic or the girl with the divination in the Bible, that she kept on saying, oh, these are really people of the Lord. Well, this guy was doing the opposite, but doing the same thing, following us. We were praying that God would deliver us from this demon, and it took another person drunk, like this other person, to take him away. He actually, at the end, they were hugging, and then they walked away so that we were able to finish. You know, God is good, because we don't know where it would
all
have escalated to. Yeah, he's always good. And so, but that is the kind of neighborhood, you know, and I look at these women and these men and in bondage, and I have to also remember that I, too, can be in that same situation if I leave Jesus Christ. So praying about the Bible work, and also praying about my surrendering, to make sure that I'm always, every single day, in surrender mode, because, you know, law without grace is nothing, and grace without law is nothing. You have to have both. And, you know, as we obey God's great commission and do his work, we also have to be, remember, cognitive, spiritually cognitive, that we're just an answer away to say, you know, do I choose God today, or do I choose Satan? And these people are in such bondage that it makes you think about where you came from, where I came from, and how I am very blessed in just showing them that opportunity to have those chains from past abuses and drug addictions and whatever can be broken. So that is the prayer that we're going to go into. And Diane has a prayer request that to continue praying for all the pastors and all the leaders of the church that are going to be conducting these events in Tennessee. Also, ASI is going to happen in next month in Sacramento, California. That's a convention for Assemblies of God people. So God is good. He's really working in the hearts of a lot of people. And I'll go ahead and pray if you don't have anything else to say, Ruthie.
No, I mean, my pastor's going on sabbatical, much needed sabbatical. So if we could just keep him and his family in prayer while they're on sabbatical as well. That's it.
Okay.
That's all I got.
Okay. Okay, we'll begin with the Heavenly Father. Thank you so much for this wonderful day that you have given us. Another day of life to embrace your love, your character, and to reflect you onto others who do not know who you are or have decided to choose not to know you, Lord. Lord, I come before you in the throne of grace humbly and saying, forgive me for any of the sins that I may have caused upon anybody, and especially to you, Lord, that I might not know of or that I do know of, and Lord, forgive me. I come to you with Ruthie's family dynamics. You know exactly what's going on, and it's really crushing the family. It is a hard place to be, so please take care of Ruthie and her family, her immediate family, as well as her the core family, aunts, uncles, whomever is involved in this family dynamics. Also, Ruthie's asking for a special prayer because forgiveness is a part of healing, and she would like the Holy Spirit to move upon her heart to get that spirit of forgiveness. In addition, I will put Pastor
Greg.
Her pastor's going on to sabbatical. So I just ask you, Lord, to take care of him and his family. Ruthie has praise reports. Lord, bless her daughter, continue blessing her daughter as she gets more ages, years in her under her belt, and bless her family, her little family, as well as prepare her youngest daughter to go to her new the university in Mississippi. And I can't really forget about where it's at, because I think of Tennessee and Mississippi. Lord, so bless us all. You know my prayers. Ruthie also has a mission trip to Russia. They feel that the Holy Spirit has been leading them to contact VSB. So, Lord, bless that as well. And this program, for those who are listening, may the Holy Spirit come in and really move their hearts and their minds. Thank you, Lord, for all these things you've given to me. In the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Okay. So, Ruthie, I am going to tell you something that's really interesting. People think that we're getting a control and a handle on gangs, yet we are watching and hearing and seeing, okay? Watching and seeing are two different things. Seeing on the television some things that, you know, are horrendous, watching events unfold in front of us, and experiencing the results of gang violence.
Absolutely.
I don't think we're getting a handle on it. I don't think so. However, there's some communities that you can't even go in the United States without worrying about if you're wearing the wrong color, let alone driving a decent car. So what is your experience up here? I mean, up there in Texas, I mean, there are some problems out there.
I'm sure that they are. You know, to be honest with you, I haven't encountered any problems. I've been here 5 years and I haven't encountered any
now.
Gangs.
I'm
or... So, you know, I guess I'm pretty fortunate, or the city is fortunate. I don't know, but I haven't encountered them. But I will say, when I was living in New York City, I remember this vividly. Some years ago, there came a time when you couldn't wear, I think it was red, if I'm not mistaken, because that put your life in danger. People were getting, you know, stabbed and slashed and blah, blah, blah. So I remember my daughter had a red coat, and I had to go out and buy her another coat, and I wouldn't let her go, you know, use her red coat. And it was just a really fearful time. And then I remember also when there was a time, and I don't know if that this still exists, but when they were doing gang initiations, that if you saw a car with their lights off, and, you know, the normal decorum is to flash your lights at them so that they know that their lights are off, so they'll turn it on and avoid a ticket, that if you did that, and it turned out to be a gang member in a gang initiation, they would follow you and kill you. So,
exactly. They're doing that still.
So since that time, I will never, ever flash my lights at another vehicle. I'm like, that's between you and the cop that stops you. Wrong or right, that's my take on it. I've been practicing it for years. But I am not going to be the one. I like my lights.
You know, but it's the weirdest. You're like, I love me. I'm sorry.
I like breathing.
Exactly. You're like the other side of the 6 feet, okay? So the thing about it, but it is a serious thing, and because there are many one-parent households, there's, like, you know, we've spoken before on the show with different individuals who have worked with gangs, who have been in gangs and are still working with gangs. And tonight we're going to have Karen Stone. I am just shocked again, and I'm going to go ahead and I read this before, but just in case you've never heard this before, teen violence carries with it some interesting statistics. Many concerned organizations compile them regularly to raise awareness of teen violence. This fact sheet contains some statistics of teen violence from reliable sources, and then I'll give you the reliable sources, or you can email us at any time. In 2000, and now this is the most current one. This is 2000. This is 11 years ago. We need some more statistics, and I hope that maybe in the future I can bring up some more. But violent crimes are committed by teens every year. The National Youth Violence Prevention and Resource Center provides these statistics on teen violence regarding violent crimes. In 2000, about 1,561 youth under the age of 18 were arrested for homicide, not by stealing your car, not from stealing a candy bar, not from writing a bad check. We're talking about homicide, permanent damage. In 2009, 9% of the murders in the United States were committed by persons under the age of 18. 1 in 10 teens arrested has been engaging in a violent activity that could have resulted in the serious injury or the death of another person. Teen violence is a very real occurrence, and violent crimes are committed by teens regularly. And these teens, if they're not doing it by themselves, they will often find a group that will do it with them, will initiate, you know, for example, when you say gangs, you hear of these horrific things like one of the initiation was the girl that she got out of her car. It was just really weird. It was broad daylight. She got out of her car. She was going to pump gas in her car. She went into the gas station to go ahead and pay for her pump, and the attendant saw that a guy got in behind her car. I mean, in the back seat of her car. And he says, please don't go back to your car. I need to call 911. There is a gentleman who just jumped into the back of your car. Anyway, what was that? Basically, it was a gang initiation. What they want, the purpose of him jumping in the back of seat of her car was to make her drive somewhere, and they were going to sexually assault her, all these guys, and then kill her.
Wow.
And it's like, you know, ever since I read that, I was like, okay, lock doors, look at your car, you know. But this is broad daylight, and this is going to, you know, and thankfully she stayed quiet, you know, and she stayed there talking to him. I believe that they were talking, you know, making conversation until the police came and surrounded the car. And there was a car very nearby, and just to look at the, I guess they wanted to make sure that, you know, this is a place, this is the woman that you're going to take down, and that's it, which is kind of sad, because this is a kid that his life is going to be marred for the rest of his living days. And so, therefore, what do you do? You know, what do you do when things like that happen? How do we stop it?
You know, that's a question that people and professionals dealing with this have been asking themselves for generations and generations. And, you know, I know that there was a time that gang violence went down. It wasn't as popular. I remember growing up, one of my brothers was Hell's Angels. You know, and that was back in the day when, you know, they were a motorcycle gang. And, I mean, you know, I remember a brawl. I'll never forget this. There was an argument that broke out between neighbors. And between one of my neighbors and my uncle, I believe it was. And of course, my brother felt that his civic duty was to go and get the rest of the Hell's Angels and come back. And this argument turned into a fight, and all of a sudden it turned into a block fight. I kid you not. And the next thing you know, I mean, this is in the 70s, you know. The next thing you know, you hear this roar, and there must have been about 100 Hell's Angels popping up in their motorcycles. And they were coming from all the different streets. And I'm talking, this fight broke out, and it, you know, it spilled out into the street where traffic, you know, completely paralyzed the street. And people were jumping. People that had nothing to do with it were jumping in. I mean, I remember this was the day, you know, back in the days when the nunchucks were legal. So they had the nunchucks and bats.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was the wildest thing I have ever seen. I mean, and it went on for about an hour. It spread to blocks and blocks and blocks. And I remember freaking out because I was a little girl, you know, and I'm just seeing all this craziness all around me. But that was like my first introduction to gangs, when I saw these guys come up. And I mean, obviously they came up to defend my family and no one got killed, but you know, it's been around for a long time, but I remember after that time, it kind of died down. And gangs weren't really a problem until, say, maybe like a decade later in the 80s. In the, like, mid-80s, it started to be a problem again.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think, like, Eminem, Snoop Dogg, now, personally, I know people that know him and they've worked with him, and then let's not go into
they've
that.
They've worked
but
with
anyway,
which one?
With Snoop Dogg. And, you know, on videos and everything, you know, as behind the scene that I work in. But I believe the glorification of being a gangster on videos and music. And also, what is this high chase car chasing videos that they have right now? Nintendo or Box, you know, I don't have children now in the house. They're all grown up. But that, you know, I guess auto theft and all that stuff, it seems like it's glorifying that lifestyle. And I'm going to tell you something. These children forget, or they don't see. This is just for some are put on, and it's an image that they have to put. But they don't live in the block. Like Jenny doesn't live in the block, and I'm not talking about Jennifer Lopez, and she's not a rapper. But you know, she doesn't live in the block. She lives in the hills. She lives in Beverly Hills, and this is something that the pastor was talking about.
Yeah, but
yesterday.
She started out on the block.
Right, she started out, but, you know, the glorification is like a lot of these people live in Beverly Hills, live in the Hollywood homes, and they're not doing that as they, you know, like they're portraying that they're, you know, they want to be in the hood and they want to run, you know. I just think that being glorified and kids are just falling for that image. And also they're looking for love in all the wrong places because, you know what, it's like a family. When you are in a gang, it just seems like it's a family that, you know, they watch each other's back because if they don't, somebody else will take them out. And so,
Well, it is a family. A lot of the statistics that I know about gangs are things that, you know, I've seen on news shows on television. So I haven't done a lot of research on it, but I will tell you that what I do know is that, you know, being in a gang is like being in a family, and it's more important than your family. That's how they get you. And it's my belief that they prey on people that don't feel that they have love at home, or that, you know, they feel like they're missing something. They're looking for love. They're looking for acceptance somewhere. And if they're not getting it at home, they're going to get it from their peers. And it's unfortunate, but this is what happens. And so, you know, we as parents and as adults, we also have a responsibility to our children, to make them feel wanted and loved and make them feel comfortable coming to us so that they don't go outside to get
right.
their comforts elsewhere.
Well, you know, Karen Stone is going to be with us in a couple of seconds here. I'm going to read his bio here and say a little bit about what he's doing. But I guess he will be able to tell us really what it is to be in a gang, because obviously I've been in a clique, definitely. But a clique is very different from a gang. And
I mean, the only difference is that there isn't any violence.
Exactly.
Sometimes.
But
it's not really that different otherwise.
Exactly. Exactly.
You have to be in to belong.
Exactly. And you know what? It's funny because, yeah, what we used to do to some of the girls that were a little different, of course, it was done to me as well. We used to treat them so badly and spread rumors. I didn't, but I was belonging to the clique, so, you know, tell me who you walk with and I'll tell you who you are. So, but anyway, Terrence L. Stone is the founder and president and CEO of Young Visionary Youth Leadership Academy and CEO of Stone Consultants, an ex-gang member who has turned his life around and dedicated it to God and the recovery of our youth's innocence. Though gang life proved fierce and most times even short-lived, Terrence was loyal to a fault. Ultimately, the consequences of this delinquent lifestyle was a collective 10 years of incarceration, ranging from the juvenile facility to the state penitentiary, with the danger of spending the remainder of his youth life in prison. The thought that he'd never have an opportunity to watch his children grow and assist in their development opened his eyes to what was truly important. Today, Terrence is a loving father who has since served as minister and youth leader at Worship in Truth, COGIC. Stone today has served as a youth counselor and graduate of Cal State Los Angeles for state certified gang prevention specialist. Serves on the Sheriff's Rod Hoops IE, which is Inland Empire Committee, Chief Keith Kilmer African American Community Leader Committee, San Bernardino and Barstow Kiwanis. You know what? This is a good one. Member. So he's also a member of the San Bernardino County Gang and Drugs Task Force, past board member of the African American Chamber of Commerce and San Bernardino Chapter NAACP, picked by the mayor of San Bernardino, Pat Morris, to join his office on the California City's Gang Prevention Network. He is committed to steering young people away from the life that cost him much of his precious youth. In essence, Terrence is allowing his life's mistake to help others discover their personal worth and true life purpose. Stone's change in heart, spirit, and action has resulted in his reaching many otherwise lost youth. He is now CEO of Young Visionaries Youth Leadership Academy, multiple locations in the Inland Empire from the high desert to the west end of San Bernardino County, Atlanta, Arizona, Texas, Colorado, and growing. I'm looking forward to seeing if he's going to happen to have something in New York City. Anyway, with that said, and my wonderful reading, if my first grader would be paying attention right now, should I say if our first grader would be paying attention right now, she would be
our
saying...
Our first grade teacher, you mean?
Yeah, our first grade teacher.
Oh, my goodness.
Mrs. Aventura, what is wrong with you?
I know, but you're saying our first grader, and I'm like, what? What first grader? We don't have a first grader.
Can you tell us? can you tell? I didn't get very much sleep.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I'm welcoming Terrence Stone in a second. Our system is a little slow, but he will be on in a second here. As soon as, let's see, I'm going to make sure that we're not really have fallen off the air here. Nope, we haven't fallen off the air, but we're still streaming, but he is not able to come on right now. But anyway, so why don't I go ahead and play one of Peter Neville? You know what? I want what song should we play?
Oh, are you talking about Lisa? Or are you talking about Peter? Or who are we talking about?
Never mind. we'll talk about then. Let's see if we can bring him back on here. Terrence, are you there? Because we don't see
I'm
you
here.
Oh, good.
I'm on. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hi, Terrence.
Oh, hey.
Yeah, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear
you.
I've just been here listening. That's good. That's good. It's a pleasure to be on. I was sitting here waiting patiently, just listening. I was like, I wonder if they know that I'm here waiting or something.
Yes, I knew you were there, and I was like, okay, we're going to bring him on. You were diligent, and you were always, you know, you're always on time. But, you know, welcome to the Blog Talk, Reborn Identity Talk, Blog Talk Radio. Today, I am a little dyslexic, more than usual, so just bear with me if I'm reading backwards. Ruthie already knows, so that she might have to take over, because at this point, it's like, okay, I'm going to read my name backwards. There's a lot that we need to cover, but I just wanted to ask you, prison and excuse? Go ahead.
What?
I
was just
going to
say the lines are opening up. Be the fifth caller and receive a gift.
Yes. Definitely. We'll give you a gift.
At 818-572-8027. 818-572-8027. Also, if you've had any experiences with gangs, we'd love to hear about it. Go ahead.
Okay, so Terrence.
Yeah.
Prison. You were an ex-gang member. I mean, please talk to us.
Were we anywhere near
what we were talking about, I mean, about gangs?
Oh, well, a little bit, and I catch a young lady's name that was talking, but like a lot of people, what happens is that they get all of their information from TV and radio and things like that, which are sometimes just really fabricated truths about gangs and the lifestyle and things like that. So you guys were medially on track as far as media is concerned. Myself, I was in gangs 15 years. I was actually raised in gangs, but officially like in gangs for like 15 years of my life, second generation gang member. And I was listening to the young lady. She was talking about how the gangs kind of recruit the kids that don't have families and things like that, when actually it's almost opposite, really, because like we have no really way of knowing if kids have families or not. So what happens is that kids that don't have that family structure will gravitate towards the gangs, you know, for that type of family structure. You know what I mean? So it's kind of, you know, it's kind of weird in a sense, but a lot of times that's what happens, you know, and they find that family within that neighborhood or that gang or wherever they grew up at.
Oh.
Yeah.
So basically, they don't know the dynamics. They just
they're just basically doing what they do. You know what I mean? They don't you know, put up signs and stuff like that. But young people just will gravitate to what they seem to see a successful team. You know what I mean? And people want to be part of a successful team. So if you have a neighborhood and the most structured, the most successful thing that you see in that neighborhood, besides probably the police, is that gang is there, you know, seem to be running things and making stuff happen and things like that, then to them, to that young person, that group of people will be what they would call like a successful team. That's the team that's running that neighborhood and making stuff happen and things like that.
Wow.
Hmm.
By the way, my name is Ruthie.
It's what? I'm excuse me.
It's Ruthie.
Ruthie, how you doing?
Or Ruth.
Ruthie,
oh, I'm good.
Okay.
How are you?
Good, good. And excuse me if I sound a little razzle-dazzle. We just took a group of kids to the Museum of Tolerance, so I'm actually driving. I just dropped off the last group right now, and I'm actually driving back home as we speak. So that was our day. I've been out there since – I've been working since, I think, we started at 10 o'clock this morning with working with kids and taking them out to the Museum of Tolerance today. So that was our ordeal for today, taking kids out for that experience.
Oh, that's good. And this is what I love about it, that you can call from anywhere and while you're doing anything, and we can still talk. Now, let me ask you, so, Terrence, what got you into trouble? I mean, because you went to the Penn. I mean, the Penn is not just for somebody, you know, stealing a candy bar, if may I ask.
Yeah. Well, my crime you're speaking of, was,
yes.
I think most of my crimes were like, can you guys hear me? Most of my crimes were like gang-related type of stuff. I went to California Youth Authority when I was 16 years old for attempted murder, and then after that it was just, you know, violations, going back, and then I caught a drug case and sent me to the penitentiary after that. So they
wow.
were just just selling drugs and doing what, you know, the gang activity type of things that gang members do.
Now, let me ask you a question. I know you said that you're second generation a gang member. Do you think that, well, did I don't know if it was your dad or your mom that was a gang member or both, but did they kind of want you to go in that direction? And do you think if they hadn't already been part of a gang that you still would have gravitated that way?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't my mom. Actually, my mom was and still is a hard worker. You know, I didn't come from like a poverty type background or nothing like that. My mother had a job like my whole life. You know, as long as I can remember, my mom, she's always been like working and hard working. That's probably where I get my work ethic from. My real dad overdosed on heroin when I was 2 years old. And then so my mother married another guy that was gang related. Back then, before they had like Crips and Bloods and things, they had the black gangs in California. They were like, where in Southern California, they were like businessmen and gladiators and things like that. And a lot of those older guys turned either Crips or Blood. My stepdad that raised me was a businessman, and then I had uncles and things like that that were in gangs, and some of them are still in gangs to this day that also had a hand in raising me. So one way or another, I was always brought up like in or around gangs as far as I can remember being a toddler. So but they
wow.
didn't. And no one ever like, you know, like, man, when he grows up, he's going to be the toughest, you know, gang member. You know, actually, I remember conversations where they say, well, Terrence is a smart kid. When he gets old, he's going to be a lawyer or a doctor and things like that. But the reality is that there was no lawyers or doctors surrounding me. You know, there was just guys that were selling drugs or either doing drugs or in gangs. So so being a young male, if I had to look for somebody to look up to, because we can't be raised by TV or the Huxtables or George Jefferson or nothing like that. But the immediate people in my circle didn't have the type of lifestyle that I grew up in. So then you gravitate towards what you know, right? Because I think in the same sense, if I grew up around doctors and lawyers and people that had high expectations in education, then I would have pursued in that direction. You know, when I think back and I look at my family structure and the males that are in my family, I think I had, well, I know I had one uncle that was just like legit. You know, this uncle, when I was young, he was like a substitute PE teacher and going to school, but you know, but it just seemed like so uncool to me at that time because I had other uncles that were in the streets and, you know, and they was like the man, you know, their confidence level was up and they walk around the streets and they demanded that respect that they got. And but that one uncle that I have, he was just like a substitute teacher and a PE coach, you know, coach basketball or something like that. So growing up, you know, he was just like the uncool type of uncle, you know. But in reality, as I got older and he got older and everyone got older, what happened was that he went on to be that substitute teacher to a principal, or to a regular teacher, to a principal, to a superintendent of schools. And all my other uncles are either still doing the same thing, passed away, or locked up in jail, you know, things like that. So what seemed to be really uncool is really like now to this day is like the coolest person, you know, that I can know, that I can have in my life right now. But we don't have those type of role models that, you know, that will stay. Usually if someone, especially African-American in that community, also probably a lot of times in the Latino, Hispanic community, if you get college educated, we get a good job, we don't want to live in that same neighborhood, you know, because the thing is to get better and then move out, you know, and move on to a better life so that you don't have to raise your kids, you know, in an environment like that. A lot of times we move out and we don't look back, you know, because we have to raise our kids and we don't want our kids to grow up like we grew up, you know.
That's a good point. I hadn't really thought about it, but you're right on that one because I know I got the heck out of Dodge as soon as I could.
Yep.
Yeah.
South Bronx was not the place for any of us.
Well, just think though, if we did learn how to not leave when we become successful, you know, and I understand the reasons for leaving, you know, one is that you'll be a victim of robbery or burglary every time you leave your house. But what if we didn't have to leave our neighborhood so that we can come back or find a way, a system or something that we can come back and work with our young people to let them know, you know, that you could be whatever you can be, because when we leave and nobody sees those great examples that we need in the community because as soon as we get that education, you know, and we land that great job, you know, we leave and don't come back. We probably come back and visit a family member once a year on Thanksgiving, but besides that, you know, we out of there, and so all the younger kids who they have to look up to. I heard you guys speaking of like a Snoop Dogg and stuff like that. I understand Snoop Dogg don't live in his neighborhood no more, but you can catch him in Long Beach every now and then, you know, or in Los Angeles, you know, walking in the streets or he has a football league and things like that. So even though what he says on his records is not good, he still comes back to his community, you know, with the football league and things like that. So then if they see like a Snoop Dogg, but they don't see no doctors opening up or starting football leagues or lawyers coming back and starting football leagues, or the businessman coming back and starting football leagues, you know, whose mentality are they going to look up to? They're going to be like, well, he did it and he's a gangster. You know what I mean? You know, and plus he came back, he's tangible. I can touch Snoop Dogg. When he comes back, he don't come back to the neighborhood with a gang of security. You'll see Snoop Dogg out there coaching the football team by himself, you know, and just hanging out, you know what I mean, and it's no big deal to him. But a lot of people get successful, and they don't do that, you know, they don't come back and just kind of relate to the community so they'll know. So then you can't get mad at a young man if you say, like, man, I want to be like Snoop Dogg, you know. Well, and if you have somebody to compare to, why you don't want to be like Obama? You know, well, Obama don't really come to the neighborhood. He, you know, right now he's president, but he's still a TV type of figure that you don't see him, you know, unless, you know, he's up on the TV. You know, you won't catch an Obama, and I love him, I respect my president, but you won't catch Obama walking through, you know, the Chicago street, you know what I mean, and stuff like that, you know. So what we need to know how to do is just come back, because then you can't even really blame the young people for doing what they're doing, because there's nobody really coming back to show them another way, to show them that you can make it out and still come from the same environment. I respect I'm up in Barstow a lot. I respect the mayor of Barstow, Joe Gomez. Mayor Joe Gomez was raised in a project in Barstow. Actually, I had a youth center right across the street from his house where he was raised at. But even though he was the mayor, he drove a nice, bright yellow Hummer, he still would come back he still would come back, and he still would come back, you know, every Friday, you know, and come out and feed those kids with us and work with those kids and just sit there for some hours just to hang out with the kids and let them know, like, man, you know, I should live right across the street. I'm the mayor of this whole city now. You know what I mean? So, but everybody don't do that. We need more people to start coming back and working with these young people, you know. Besides that, then you can't point the finger at them and be like, well, how come you like this? How come you like this? You know, well, because, you know, you abandoned me. Why shouldn't I be like this? Nobody came back to you know, to help me to go in another direction.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's true. And you know what? Children learn by, and they mirror that which is around them, which if the environment is, it's not conducive for them, but if they have one or two or three strong brothers or sisters that really focus on education and really help them mold, it doesn't matter where they will be at because they have that influence from those positive people. And we're starting to see a lot of, you know, as I mentioned in my email, I'm going into some areas where it's like, who do you look up to, basically? And it is scarce. There's not that many out there that are going back to the community to help. Now, let me find out something. Okay, so you did time in the penitentiary. You've gone through all this stuff. What inspired you to build an organization? Is it through your own personal experience? I know some people, you know, I have lost some people, you know, through gangs related, and that had kind of altered my life in a little way because I wanted to be a chola, but I got the memo too late because cholas, I'm Puerto Rican and cholas is Mexican, so I was not able to fit in. But the friends that I had, that they were, you know, cholas and, you know, cholos, some of my friends are no longer around. They were killed. So what inspired you to build an organization and this academy, the Youth Leadership Academy?
Yeah. Well, what happened with me, I was facing two life sentences for gang-related shooting. And then and that situation right there, and it wasn't that I was facing the time because as gang members, we understand that comes with the territory. That's part of the consequences of the lifestyles we lead is death and prison. But in that situation, I felt like that my peoples, my homies, my guys that I love, I felt like, you know, just the situation that made me feel like they didn't love me like I loved them. You know, so mine was a result of a heartbreak like that because, like, I was in, you know, I was the type that, you know, that I loved my neighborhood and I loved my homies. So after my heartbreak, just realizing that they didn't love me from that situation, they didn't love me like I loved them. That's how I felt. And what I did then, that made me stop. And what I did is I prayed. Basically, I was like, God, you get me out of this, and I'm gonna do, and I'm gonna do what I'm doing today. You know, I told him, like, you know, I'm you know, and I serve my life just, you know, working with these kids and helping them to not be in gangs and things like that. You know, so I went through trial. He let me go, and then and I've been doing it ever since. But mine is just, you know, just that ordeal, just my heartbreak from that, and a lot of young people and older people that are in gangs are. Feel like that, really. It's almost like a relationship. When I go out and I speak about it, I liken it to like an abusive relationship. And in some abusive relationships, people be like, well, how come she just don't leave? You know, well, because a lot of times it don't matter how bad the relationship is, at least it's a relationship, you know, and I think probably 99% of the population of the world would rather be in some kind of relationship than no kind of relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So just dealing with that, I call it like an abusive relationship with me in my neighborhood. You know, I decided to leave at that point. So with me, it was just that. And then I just started, I thought of my organization, started putting it together while I was locked up, because then I had the most time to sit down and really kind of just brainstorm on what I wanted to do, you know. And then as I start getting into it and maturing into it, I just start learning how to put it together as a business and things like that.
Oh, wow. So you started this while you were still incarcerated.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I developed the idea, and then I just start putting it together. At first, I just used to go out and just do speaking engagements at whoever let me speak. I didn't care if it was, you know, one people, two people, or a crowd of people. I was like, just go let me talk, you know. So I just, and then from the speaking engagements, I start putting together 12-week programs, because one speaking engagement in reality really don't work unless you're just like, I don't know, some type, but unless you're like a T.D. Jakes type of speaker, you know, to shake your whole life up in one sermon, you know, they really don't work. So because it took sometimes years and of years from those kids just to get into the, you know, the situation that they're in. So a lot of times just one speech, one talk won't do it. So we start developing like 12-week programs so that we can come back and keep coming back, or have the kids keep coming back, keep working with them and working with them, working with them, and for like 12 weeks and things like that.
Wow. And so basically you do have 12-week programs that you can go, because, you know, one thing I'm going to tell you something. When I was doing Bible camp thing in the San Bernardino last week, we ran into two guys, and, you know, they were doing, you know, they had some felonies, and I won't get involved in that. But as we were talking, he was looking at our pastor, and, I was like, yeah, okay. And when the pastor said, we have an ex-gang member in our church that did time and went to the pen, that's when they go, really? And it's like I'll listen to him before I listen to you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. He was perked when he heard, yeah, and he did time, and he's now working in the community, and he's helping. And I said, well, have you ever heard of Terrence Stone? And he goes, I've heard of him. I'm not sure where, you know. And I'm like, oh, okay, I'll continue coming over here. I need to know where you're at mentally, where you want to be. But he was perked up the minute that he heard he did time. You know, it's like, I'd rather listen to him than listen to somebody that hasn't done any time whatsoever. And so there is that need out there, and thank you so much for that your organization. Now, you know, as I was asking Ruthie, can we stop gang violence? Is it controlled? Is it out of control? What can we do?
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's most definitely out of control, and it's been out of control for probably a decade or so. I think in reality, it's always going to be like some type of gangs. Gangs didn't start with blacks and Latinos. You know, gangs, you know, they had a few, you know, one of my favorite movies is Gangs in New York. You know, they had like Irish gangs and different gangs and on the East Coast in New York and things like that, you know. And then, you know, if you watch old Al Capone movies, you know, they was doing drive-bys and Tommy guns before we had Uzis and AKs, you know, out here. So gangs didn't start here in Southern California, even though it's known as the gang capital of the world. Gangs didn't start here. I know that there will always be some type of gangs, because there will always be a reason for people that are either impoverished or pressed up against the wall to come together, you know, to feel like either for protection or to be stronger as a unit and things like that. But I think it's controllable as far as, you know, if we start working with these young people at a younger age and finding them, you know, something to do. One of the things we just did, Young Visionaries, we just purchased a store in San Bernardino. So with this store, we're going to turn this whole store into an employment development program where young people can come in, have a job, on-the-job training, and get paid, but also be learning employment development and entrepreneur skills, so that they learn how to work a business, work in a business, and also build a business and things like that. I think we need more things like that in the community so that young people can know that we didn't turn their back on them, you know, that we're still here, and we're going to help them to make life happen so that they can be successful. So, you know, I don't think gangs are going to never go away. It's always going to be a reason for somebody to come together, you know. Once you get a group of people, I don't care what nationality you are, you know, how long your hair is, how short your hair is. You get a group of people, you press your backs against the wall, they're going to form against, they're going to form together and formulate something, you know, to keep people involved from so that they won't feel so oppressed.
Yes, I believe that strongly. And it could happen to anyone. So, like you said, gang has not, it has been around forever, and it didn't just start just recently. If you look at all these, you know, Scarface and all these movies, it goes way back. So, how can we in our community? And I'm, you know, Ruthie's in Texas. I'm here in California, in San Bernardino, I mean, well, Riverside area. How can we as communities be able to partake in any of these gang violence prevention awareness?
Well, with young visionaries, you can go to our website. It's YVYLA, like Young Visionaries Youth Leadership Academy. That's like a minus IE.org, and we're willing to set up wherever we can, you know, after but we're willing to set up wherever we can to make it happen, and just trying to be there for the young people so that they can see another way. And besides that, if you don't want to set up a young visionary somewhere, you know, just figure it out. Just because people that's in their community know the needs of their community. If you know, I like, one of my favorite things is sports. I like coaches. I love coaches because, to me, coaches are one of the most creative gang intervention specialists there is. I don't care if it's a boxing coach, if it's a football coach, basketball coach, or soccer. You know, you get those kids activated on a successful team, and they've been a part of that team, part of a camaraderie, you know, then you can hopefully, you know, help to keep those kids out of gangs because they're already part of a successful team. You know, so you can set up something like that in any place. It doesn't have to be coined a gang intervention program, but it can be just some type of successful team to keep these kids out of trouble.
So, okay, I see. And let me see. If a person is in Texas, they can go to your website and the information, or
yes,
anywhere in the United States, and you guys can do a workshop.
Yes. I did international workshops. I did conferences in Australia, Bahamas, working on getting out to Canada. They requested me to come out there and do some stuff out there. So we'll go everywhere just to do workshops. After being in Kansas at the end of the year, San Diego next month, I'll be in Los Angeles tomorrow. So we can do workshops anywhere. Yeah.
Okay. And we'll get more information on your organization again in a couple of minutes here. So basically, don't point the fingers just on rappers and music and videos and all this stuff. Look at the internal issues. Are you telling us the internal issue within the community, within the family dynamics?
Yes. And I'm not, like, just letting the whole media situation off the hook, because actually media, you know, like, we're, like, moved by media. You know, music, if you look music can dictate the way we dress and everything. You know, I mean, even if you look in when is that, part of the 60s, when they had, like, the Marvin Gaye, and they were singing, you know, Brother, Brother, Brother. You know, it was a real peaceful movement back there, but the music was reflecting that also, you know. So the media is not off the hook, because they really perpetuate a lot of the violence and things like that also, because a lot of times we can't hear about it unless it's through the media. You know, like, I won't know what's going on in Afghanistan unless they put it on the news. I'm not in Afghanistan. I don't know nobody that lives in Afghanistan. So as long as they put it on the news, I know that they're over there shooting and bombing. So the media, the news, the radio, the print news and things like that, we won't know unless they tell us. So the media is not off the hook. They need to start printing more positive stuff and talk about more positive stuff and showing more positive stuff on the radio, newspaper, and television, so that we can start seeing more positive stuff. You know, and I know one thing media people say, that if it bleeds, it leads, you know. And so they'll put stuff out there that's bleeding, so that people will, you know, see that bad news and want to hear about it. You know, even our newsletters we send out monthly newsletters, and I always get the review, like how many of them were opened. You know, so then I changed the name of our newsletters. At first they were Young Visionaries Newsletters, but then when I changed them to Bad News from Young Visionaries, then they start getting opened more. But when I put Bad News, it stands for blessed and determined. So when they open that up, that's what they see, that, you know, that we're blessed and determined. So now newsletters are called Bad News from Young Visionaries. You know, but bad stands for BAD, is blessed and determined.
Wow. What? That was ingenious. It really is ingenious, because then it shows that people would rather listen to the bad news than to sit around and read something that has good. But at the same time, now they are able to. that's pretty good. That is a blessing. That is a blessing. But our prison systems, it seems like they're building more prison systems. You know what? I jumping on this, I think that they're building more prison systems to incarcerate people than opening up new buildings, organizations that are helping preventing gangs. Why do you think that is?
Why? I think I don't know. You know what? In one of my presentations, I have a slide up with just the prisons, just in California. I think California has more prisons than anybody in the world probably right now. And but one of the questions I have up there is when did they build the last prison, you know, or jail in California? You know, everybody knows the answer. But then I also have the other question, when did they build the last university in California? And, like, nobody knows. I'm still trying to figure that out. I have to Google that and see when was the last university built in California. You know, but we really don't invest in our schools like that. If you look at the budget right now, you know, I'm looking at it, and education is just getting cut more and more and more, and the tuitions are going up for the kids to go to school, making it harder to go to school, you know. And the prisons are still getting overcrowded to the point that the federal sued the state so that they have to let go more people, you know. And San Bernardino County, we have the third largest prison population, well, parolee population in the United States. I think we're probably behind, like, Detroit or another, like, East Coast city or something like that. So.
Wow. Okay. So we do have those problems that, you know, they're not building more learning institutions. They're building more prisons, and they should probably focus on taking care of the core issues, which is, you know, the dynamics within the family unit, within the community unit, instead of putting a Band-Aid, which is another prison, to take care of the problem. And I've heard that for some people, when they go to prison, they learn more on how to not get caught the next time.
Yeah, well, I don't even think prison is a Band-Aid. You know, that's just opening up the sore more, as far as, you know, because if they're sending you to prison and they're not building educational systems out here, and they also cutting educational systems in prison. You used to be able to go in there, and while you're in there, if you have an extensive amount of time, I know people that came out a long time ago with, like, doctor's degrees from prison, you know, but they cut they cut college out of prison, so you can't even, like, go to, you know, while you're in there, improve your education anymore. So now you're just sitting around waiting to do your time, you know, depending on how much time you have. You know, you can't, like, go there. It should be a place of rehabilitation, but it's not a place of rehabilitation. It's a place of hibernation, where they just sit you in there and you just hibernate, you know, until they let you back out into society with the same mentality that you had before you went in there, because there's nothing in there really to help you to forward and go forward with a whole different mentality. I think I was blessed when I came home. My mother was, like I said, my mother was a hardworking woman all my life. She was a head supervisor at a bus company when I came home. So when I came home, I was able to get a job, you know, within 30 days of me being released from prison. I was driving city buses, you know, and I was able also to get some of my guys that I grew up with jobs over there, and some of their parents' jobs over there too, that I think some of them are still driving buses to this day, you know, because of my contacts in there. But a lot of people don't have like those opportunities, you know, when they come home, or you know, they usually come home to the same situation that they left, and a lot of times it's pretty discouraging, or it's just the trying to find a job or get employed and things like that. And a lot of times, if we don't start our own businesses, then we're left with the jobs that nobody don't want, and we fighting to get those jobs, you know. Yeah. I think that a lot of people that are incarcerated are coming home. We should have like entrepreneur programs to teach these people how to start and run their own businesses. So then at least they can have a job, not just selling it for any job, but have a job that they're gonna be proud of, and it's their job. I think if a lot of guys that are in gangs or hung around gangs and are involved in gangs, if they had the opportunity to start their own business in their own community, I think that would bring down a lot of just riffraff in their community, because what happens is that they're going to be now trying to upgrade their community, because they want people to come to their place of business and patronize and do business with them at their businesses, things like that. So I think more entrepreneurialism, plus the fact that a lot of people aren't willing to hire ex-felons, people that come home from prison because of their background or because of their record. So my theory is, you can't find a job, let's make a job. So then you won't have to worry about being hired or nothing like that. Now, me with Young Visionaries, my organization, like I don't worry about sending out job applications. I negotiate contracts now instead of, you know, I haven't filled out an application in years. You know, so now we just write grants and do that, and I negotiate contracts instead of filling out, you know, job applications, stuff like that.
Wow, that's amazing. I have one last question off of all my questions, but before we go on break, and a mini break, and then we'll come back on. Before you answer this question, think about it. We'll go on break and we'll come back. Can you give us some success story? Or give us one success story because of time, we need to cut it short. But if you can give us a success story, we will be right back. I'm going to sing Lisa Pierre. Well, I'm going to put it, not sing myself personally, but I would like to place Lisa Pierre up. I know, you know, because, you know, when I started singing, everybody flares. You amazed me. And for the last time, I was like, what are you doing? I forgot to mute my phone. But anyway.
Call the drop it.
Anyway, oh Lord Jesus, give me patience here with myself. Anyway, I'm going to put this on. We'll be right back. Thank you so much. This is Lisa Pierre.
You amaze me. You
You amaze me. You know, God can change the lives of so many people, and we have tonight a specific life that has been changed and is doing a great work in the community, and that's Terrence L. Stone with Young Visionaries. Welcome back, Terrence. Thank you so much for being on our show again.
Thank you.
So before the break, Terrence, Vivian was asking you about any success stories that you may have.
Oh, yeah, we have quite a few. Just thinking of a couple for education. We had a young person last year from our program, is now in Harvard University in Washington.
Wow.
Yeah, and then next month we have another young person going to UNLV next month as a freshman, University of Las Vegas.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, we have a lot of. We were at a. We have a program called From Pistols to Pencils, and that's a youth advocacy training program. And those kids meet on Sundays, and they advocate against gang and gun violence. And in that program, I had a young man. You know, he just walked up to me. He's been in the program for probably like a month or so, and he's second generation gang member. He's 17 years old, but it's his dad. Raised him in gangs and around gangs. So, you know, he just walked up to me. He was like, man, you know, like, how can I, you know, I want to get out of this gang stuff, you know. So we just sat down and I was just, you know, just giving him, like, tips. You know, the first tip is, like, you know, don't go to your neighborhood campaigning, you know, saying, I quit, fool, I quit, you know. But just, you know, it just, you know, just do it subtle. Just change your program. You know, if you wasn't going to school, start going to school. If you, you know, if you need a job, we'll help you get a job so that you can occupy that time that you had that you were just using just to hang out and stuff like that. So we got some a few kids that were in that lifestyle, or you know, that wanted to just change their lives and things like that. And with the kids, I'm kind of transparent as far as that I wasn't. And or I'm an ex-gang member, so that they can see that someone can come out of that lifestyle and still be successful and keep their head up and walk and still, you know, do what they do and things like that, or do what they want to do, actually.
That's good. So let me ask you a question. What other programs are you promoting in the U.S.?
Well, we have our employment development program where we train young people employment development skills and entrepreneurial skills. We have a program called From Corners to College where we get inner city kids in college. We have our team VIP, Violence Intervention Prevention Program, which is our gang intervention programs, and our club VIP, our mentoring programs, and things like that. I'm trying to think. I know we got some more. It's like a whole list of them. I'll be trying to think.
Right, and I know people can go on your website and get more information on all the different programs that you have available. But let me ask you this question, because this is really important, because as I'm listening to you talk about all these different programs, I'm wondering how you're funding them. So what upcoming events do you have that generate funding for all these programs?
Yeah, actually, our funding really comes from grant writing. I have three teams of grant writers that are just excited about writing grants and getting funding for the program. They really believe in the program and things like that. So besides those three teams of grant writers, those are basically all the really fundraising that we do. We just bought this store. And we're going to turn it into an employment development program. So hopefully that can bring in some income also that we can put right back into the program also, you know. But we get a lot of in-kind. We've had San Manuel, Band of Mission Indians gave us a brand-new van, 15-passenger van that we can take the kids to different outings. We just use it to take them out to the Museum of Tolerance today. We do different things. Last year we worked with 10,000 young people. We've even had today the actor Jason Finn from the Freedom Riders movies came out with us and hung out with me and the kids and Joseph Williams from Youth Action Project at Ms. Emma Tolerance. The actor Kel Mitchell comes out and he does his back house parties out here, and I help him to host that and bring kids out. We also do with Kel Mitchell a school tours that we tour the schools talking about positive things for young people. We also working with right now Gabriel Cannon, Nick Cannon's little brother. Nick Cannon has an organization that he started with Quincy Jones called Stop Hating. So we're partnering with the Stop Hating campaign. So now Gabriel Cannon comes out every week with us and works with the kids on media training and things like that. So we have a lot of different things going on. We also, when it's September 9th, we're doing 200 free haircuts and school supplies for kids. We do that every year and things like that. And we have some other annual events that we do every year. We just, you know, I feel like as long as I give, I'll get. So I spend most of my time just giving. Stuff goes right through me, you know, and as long as stuff goes through me, you know, I'll just be that vessel, because, you know, because it has to come to you before it can go through you. So as long as I'm giving, then I feel like I'll get. So every opportunity that I have to give, then that's what I do.
Wow, that's amazing. How can someone that's interested in volunteering sign up and volunteer with your organization?
Well, first with us, it's always paperwork first. So if you go to our website, yvyla-ie.org, if you go to our contacts page, there's a volunteer application on there. You fill out that, it downloads in Word. You just fill out that application, and then we'll get back with you from there. So that we can kind of screen the people that we have working with the young people. But it all starts with that application right there.
Okay, and what are some of the requirements? I know working with children that the requirements are a little bit more stringent.
Yeah, like with us, we're just looking for, like, nothing, like, with no crimes against children, you know, things like that. If you rob the bank, you know, you're all right with me, just don't rob us, you know. But as long as it's like crimes against children or crimes against women and things like that, those are the things that we can't really tolerate within the company, and it won't get past our insurance. Those are the two main crimes. But I've had guys that have been in jail for murder before come out and talk to the kids, you know, but the kids listen because they seen that this guy was a ex-gang member being locked up, you know, for murder. So they like listening to his story, like, oh man, you know, and able to get through to the young people. So it's just, you know, crimes against women and children are the two things that won't even get through our insurance to, you know, so you won't even be covered to come out and work with us.
Okay, so let me ask you a question, because you just brought up something that's really big, that you have guys that are, you know, previous gang members come out and volunteer with the kids. I know growing up, and even as an adult, the word on the street, and I don't know how true this is that once you're in a gang, you can't get out unless you give up your life. So how is it possible for someone like yourself or someone right now that is in a gang and wants to get out to walk away and still maintain their life?
Yeah. Well, my thing is just, you know, because gangs are really, like, out of sight, out of mind. And if you don't believe me, go to jail, you know, and see how many people write you and communicate with you, stay in touch with you, you know, over the years. The more time you do, the more people will drop off and forget about you. So my thing is, that's why I tell young people, I say, just change your program. To be a gang member, that's a verb. It's not a noun. It's something that you do. So it's an action word. So I say, change your verb. You know, instead of hanging out on the block, start going to school. You know what I mean? Even if you have to switch schools or get homeschooling, you know, just start doing stuff that'll occupy your time. Don't go to your neighborhood campaigning like, fool, I quit, I don't want to kick it no more, you know, because then what that'll do, because of the pride in the neighborhood, then that'll give them a reason to come after you, you know, and try to make an example out of you. So I say, just start changing your program. Gangs are out of sight, out of mind. You'll be gone long enough, they kind of forget about you till they see you. You know, my situation, I think I've been doing this so long that, you know, now I'm known for doing this. You know, so now when they see me, they're like, man, I heard you doing a good job. Keep it up. You know, I get calls almost every day from guys with life in the penitentiary, you know, just telling me, you know, just keep up the good work, because a lot of guys in there are, and I know guys that have been locked up since we were just in our early 20s, you know, for years now, for over 18 years, and they're getting tired of seeing young people come in there with getting life and things like that, you know. So when they contact me, they're like, man, you know, just keep up the good work, because all I'm seeing is young people coming in and out of this prison, and a lot of young people that are going in there are never going home. You know, they have Proposition 21 was passed in California, where they can give it's a gang enhancement law where they can trial a kid at 14 years old as an adult and send him to prison. And at first that law was that they can give you life in prison, but they just changed the law probably maybe less than 6 months ago that they can't give kids life in prison anymore. But kids are still going to prison getting 50 years and 30 years and 75 years and things like that. They're just not giving them that L for life, but they're giving him, you know, enough years that it'll be the rest of his life in jail anyways.
Right. Ooh. Okay, well, what would you say to a struggling parent, a parent that's struggling with their teen and with gangs? What would be the course of action that you would recommend that they take?
First of all, just, you know, like, just stay in that kid's corner. Don't be like, okay, it's either, you know, some parents, they'd be like, okay, well, it's me or the gang. You know, and 9 times out of 10, that kid will choose that gang, because the gang isn't saying it's me, it's us or your family, you know. But then you put that ultimatum, the parent or the mother, out of frustration, will put that ultimatum on that young person: is me or the gang. And so that kid will choose that gang because that gang isn't, you know, telling them pull your pants up or your pants are too big or take out the trash. You know, they just accept you are you, or how you doing, homie? I'm glad to see you today. You know, so one thing I would say, just keep loving that young person, stay in a corner, you know, just try to find positive male or strong female role models, you know, to build that person's life. I think right now with me, the strongest people in my life in numbers are probably women. You know, I have a lot of strong males in my life now, but still the women outnumber the males as far as strong, positive role models. I'm sorry to say, but they do. But the women outweigh the men and strong, positive role models, you know, in my life right now. But I think that because of that too, because a lot of men are locked up, you know, and probably never coming home, or they locked up, and when they get out, you know, they're struggling to get back in the position that they should be in. So I think parents should just, you know, just stay in that kid's corner and find a positive role model. If they're not that person, you know, to be in that kid's life, spend time. You know, my son is with me all the time when he's not at school. You know, I just, we went to the museum. He was there too, like going in there and look, you know, things like that. So, you know, just spend time with those young people, you know, and just encourage them. You know, every word don't have to be, and a lot of times it's out of frustration or just parenting because they were parented like that. You know, a lot of the negative talk because when they go to their homies, you know, they don't have that negative talk from them. They like, glad to see you, have a Coke and a smile every time I see you. So, you know, parents have to, you know, we just have to be more patient and just work with the young people and find the different resources. I think every community should have some type of resource, a lexicon somewhere, either online or in a book or something. I know in San Bernardino we have 211 where you can call and get all the different kinds of resources and things like that.
Yeah, we have that so, here in Texas
know.
Too.
Yes,
211 and 311.
Yes, yes. They need to be aware of these things and log on and try to find those different resources, you know, for their young people. Keep them involved and stuff. And just
absolutely.
Keep them busy.
So how would you say that that God has been blessing you in this ministry?
Well, I think it's just been, you know, just beyond my beliefs. You know, I started my organization with a backpack and a dream. You know, now I think we're probably one of the strongest gang intervention programs in San Bernardino County. And So, and that's just in that in itself is just unbelievable to me. You know, I think I've been restored to be in positions that I, if I would have never been in trouble, to be in, I'm on the state gang intervention network with the mayor's office. Congressman Joe Baca's office just called me, I think last week, to be on his African American Advisory Committee. I'm on the IE committee with our Sheriff Hoops. I'm on a committee with the Chief of Police, and I'm on the Board of Directors for the Countywide Drug and Gang Task Force, among a few other things that I participate in and things like that. So, you know, just in that, just being able to be active, you know, and doing what I'm doing, I know that I'm most definitely, when it comes to gang intervention, I know I hear my name always comes up, and if you're conversating about gangs or gang intervention, 9 times out of 10, my name will pop up in that conversation, you know. So that's just a blessing within itself, you know. So I'm working on a book right now, doing gang awareness, so that I can the book will be able to through this book you'll be able to train on gang awareness and things like that for like law enforcement, teachers, mm-hmm. social workers, and parents also.
Yeah, because I was just thinking, and you know, you might be able to include that in your final thoughts, that there's got to be some telltale signs that, you know, parents or guardians could be on the lookout for whether your son or daughter is involved in a gang or courting a gang or however you want to say it.
Yeah.
But we are coming, you know, to the end of the program, so I just wanted to give you an opportunity to share any final thoughts that you had with us.
Yeah. Like you said, one of the telltale signs, just look for the writing's always on the wall. Just look for stuff that they write on the thing, because one thing about gang members, they're very proud. They have to write it on something all the time, so just look at the folders and around the room, and you'll probably see something with some type of gang stigma on there. But I just want to tell everybody, just stay encouraged. You know, God is great. You know, and He can, no matter how hard you fall, no matter how deep you think you fell, you know that He can always restore you, put you back on your feet, and you can do and be anything you want to do or be. You know, just believe in Him and yourself, and you'll make it. You can make it happen. You know, you just have. Just have the courage to be who He wants you to be. You know, He already knows that you can do it. He's just waiting on you to believe that you can do it also.
Wow, that's pretty powerful.
Yes, that is.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Terrence, for spending your evening with us and helping to spread awareness, not only about gangs, but giving hope to parents and young people that may be involved in a gang, that there is life after gangs.
Yeah. And also, if I have 1 second, I just want to pay homage to a lot of people that helped me to be where I am and do what I do. One of my greatest mentors, Bo Taylor, started Unity One. Also, my guys, Skip Townsend, Akil Bashir, my guys out in Arkansas, and, you know, across the United States, that, you know, my whole network of people, you know, that helped me out and you know, had kind of schooled me and showed me Taco and all the rest of you guys. Blinky Rodriguez, you know, I have to appreciate those guys because they were doing it before me.
Oh, what a blessing.
Absolutely. That is a blessing.
Definitely. Well, Terrence, as always, it's a wonderful to hear your voice again, and I'm looking forward to working with you in collaboration in the San Bernardino area as we target those areas. And I know God is going to bless tremendously. He's already blessing. He brought you into the picture and other people that are standing with you. So I would like to say also thank you so much. And next Sunday we're going to have Joanne Funch. Just for anybody that wants to know, Joanne Funch, she is she's a grief expert. I am not speaking well tonight, but I'm going to be better next week. But I'm looking forward to having her I'm sorry, but I have not been sleeping. I'm looking forward to having her on because she's going to show us, is there a real or true way of grieving? Is there a right way of grieving? And we shall find out. Grieving is grieving, and it's individual for everybody else. Well, good night, everyone. May you all be blessed. Remember, please keep yourselves educated in the Word, that no one may deceive you. Do good unto others and keep your eyes focused on Christ. May you all be ready to say one day, I fought the good fight. Until next time. Ruthie?
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
The Reborn Identity Blog Talk Radio was brought to you by the following sponsors. Rushing Media, a full-service public relations marketing and strategy company. Creative Network Solutions, creating possibilities for the future of your business. Palo Enterprises, a professional services company, serving the needs of our individuals with notary, title abstract, insurance, real estate, and photography services. And Hype Seminars, preparing, exploring, achieving the power of choice.